Everybody get up, it's time to slam now. We got the real jam going down. Welcome to the Space Jam.
Comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line. A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it! They win it! Kemba Walker. Step back.
To the first ever episode of Full Court Press. I'm your host, Josh Franz, joined always by my partner in crime, Nick Merrick. Nick, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, good to be on the show, Josh. Should be a fun year for us, covering everything from NBA and NCAA basketball. But I'm a junior here at Arizona State University, born in Chicago. So NBA team's always been a Chicago Bulls fan for most of my life. And then when I went over out east with my parents, moved to Chapel, North Carolina, so UNC Tar Heels. And, of course, the Arizona State Sun Devils are my two college basketball teams. But other than that, I'm just big, avid fan, love basketball. College basketball is probably my forte. I know you're a big NBA guy, so we'll have some good banter in the booth. But, Josh, what about you?
Yeah, you said it. You're the college expert. I'm the pro expert. I grew up in L.A., huge Lakers fan, really couldn't avoid them and didn't want to. Loved watching those championships with Kobe and Shaq back in the day. Hopefully we get a new one this year with Dwight.
Pretty hard to sleep through all that hype.
No, it was awesome. And then we look forward to, well, I grew up a huge UCLA basketball fan. And no longer am I a UCLA basketball fan. I'm now an ASU basketball fan.
All right. So I was just about to ask, did you officially switch your loyalties yet?
I can't pick two teams in the same conference to like. It's too much. I also did grow up a Duke fan. I don't know why, just found something I liked about Duke. Still do, because they're never really going to play ASU in a rivalry game.
You just like the winning tradition, Lakers and Duke.
How can you go wrong with the Blue Devils and them? Maybe you could say I bandwagoned Duke when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
Didn't bandwagon L.A., from L.A., that the whole way.
But you can't be bandwagon if you're still with them now, so.
Well, they're not bad now.
That's a good point.
You're talking about them like they're never in the top 25. We'll get to this later. We'll look at the top 25 later, but they're what? They're eighth in the rankings?
They are.
You could still be a bandwagon fan of an eighth-ranked team. All right, so we're going to move on now and focus on what's going on right now in the NBA. Ty Lawson today signed a four-year, $48 million contract with the Denver Nuggets. What do you think about that, Nick?
Big ad for the Nuggets. I mean, all the players being shuffled around this offseason. And in the midst of all the other drama, just obviously ending the lockout last year. Old news, kind of, but the fact that the other sports are trying to deal with that, most notably the NHL right now. Picking up any chunk of change in this market, not a bad deal. $48 million, well-deserving for him as he averaged 16 points per game and 6.6 assists on the Nuggets. So very, very solid for his first-year starter. Also a University of North Carolina grad, as many people know. So
I figured you'd like that.
Of course, you have to give the shout-out to Ty Lawson being a fan there, but everything he's done, he's really stepped up his game since the college level. He was more of the pass-first mentality, very good at driving to the dish. His frame, you know, it doesn't even matter when you can get the job done. So I feel like he's deserving of it. Denver Nuggets have a point guard of the future. He's going to be there for quite a long time.
Yeah, he might be one of, if not the fastest guy in the NBA with the basketball in his hands. Gets to the basket at will. As you said, he can dish to teammates. $48 million over 4 years can seem like kind of a bargain. I think if they waited two more years to give him a deal, he'd be worth a max contract. I think he's that kind of player who could make a case for MVP in a few years.
Probably true, but he does like playing in Denver a lot, and also with the additions of Gallinari and also Wilson Chandler from the Knicks last season when they locked them up, I figured, I'll take the hometown discount so I could stay with this group, see if we could build around it, and then you know, $48 million, too, isn't a bad deal for other teams to pick up if he wants to trade down the road.
Right, and you know they run that fast-paced offense. Their newly acquired Andre Iguodala in the trade is going to be huge. He's a great slasher, good shooter. He's going to up that assist number for Ty Lawson.
Yeah, I think he will. I mean, Iguodala is the reason why the 76ers did so well in last year's playoffs. So, if I believe right, I think he's also a Duke graduate as well.
Just Iguodala?
I think so. Maybe
I should
not
know that. It doesn't sound familiar.
Maybe not. Maybe it's Michigan State. Maybe I'm way out of line here. So, either way, it's certainly that's probably one of the biggest teams that's been able to improve over the past 2 years. And just the additions they're trying to bring in, they're trying to contend. They want to be it year in and year out. Yeah, gave, so we'll see. Excuse me, you're actually an Arizona graduate. I should have known that from it was one of the rivals.
It was one of the teams you hated. You just got the wrong one.
I completely botched it. I should have known that one.
Yeah. But yeah, they competed really well against the Lakers in the playoffs last year. The Lakers obviously didn't show up as much as they needed to, but their speed, their quickness, their athleticism, their youth, it's tough for these older veteran teams to deal with, and they're only getting better.
Well, I mean, it's going to come down to as well what the stat line is for some of those key players. I mean, if you look at Iguodala, last year he was just over 12 points a game. That's not really where his potential should be at. He's more of an 18, 17 point scorer, in my opinion. I think that's going to help now that he's with a more experienced point guard in Ty Lawson, as he had the run with a couple of rookies last year over in Philadelphia. So maybe just all those minor changes, it'll take a while for this team to start clicking, but they could be a dark horse down maybe around the 5 or 6 spot as high out west in the NBA.
Right, and I know I said it before, but it seemed like the Sixers played more of a slow tempo game, and now he's on the Nuggets, and Coach Carl's fine with 120-point nights as long as you're not giving up over 118 points. And they're doing just that. They run, and they score, and that's perfect for what he wants. It's like the old Suns with now Michael Beasley going there, and they'll be great.
Well, speaking of scoring, and coming from Arizona State, we have to talk about this as well. A little bit older news, but James Harden getting traded. Big vibe around the NBA right now, and the fact that the Houston Rockets decided to pick him up. decided to take up his contract away from OKC after Harden said, "I'm not going to sign a long-term contract with him." Could be a money thing. Obviously, it had to have been since he got the max he could have gotten at the time from Houston. But what does this mean for OKC, knowing that they just lost arguably one of their top four players, even though he's the sixth man of the year?
Well, first of all, OKC would have loved to keep him and pay him a max contract, but they just can't do it being a small market. And as a Laker fan, I love that, because if they kept him, they would have kept giving the Lakers trouble for years to come. I think this is actually a really good trade for OKC in the long run. They got Kevin Martin, who can put the ball in the basket, and they got some young talent and some first-round draft picks.
How about Linsanity?
Well, Linsanity in Houston.
Oh, yeah. I know, but adding over there, the vice versa, I don't know. It's interesting both ways.
As a championship-contending fan of the Lakers, I'm nowhere near concerned about Houston right now.
I'd agree, but the Houston's GM did say James Harden would be kind of their cornerstone of the future, the building block, so to speak. His stats alone prove for it, as he's going to be a starter, obviously, this year, and arguably could have been one last year, but his role on the bench, he really did enjoy playing. He fit well in that role behind Westbrook, who obviously, God, I don't even know what you classify him anymore, if he plays the point guard or the two guard. He literally plays everything, so the fact that Harden could say, "That's okay, you do your job, I'll come and hit the clutch baskets when you need to," it's going to be a different look for him out in Texas. So
I don't think ever since Arizona State he's been the number one option. And he had personal success at Arizona State, but ASU never really did anything in March. And so it's a different type of pressure now. And I think James Harden was the best point guard on that Thunder team. I think Westbrook was the better shooting guard. Now you move over to Houston, Jeremy Lin is a shot-first point guard just like Westbrook. And is Harden going to start at shooting guard for them?
I think he will. I think that's actually where he fits in well, because he doesn't like having the rock. Ever since he left ASU, he kind of enjoys that laid-back style. Let me play off the ball.
I think he's best with the ball in his hand, though. I think he's a better distributor than Westbrook and better than Lin.
I do agree with that, but I think he's more he wants to play his role more as a three-point threat, as an off-the-ball kind of player, which will give him more court space with Jeremy Lin and others assisting him. I don't think that's where his role is. I do agree with you in that aspect. But in the point that he's going to have to fit in that two-guard mold, I believe, for now, until they decide what the heck they're going to do.
Right. I think it works. It just doesn't utilize all the talent that he has. Now, all right, so for OKC, little pause there. For OKC,
can't complain.
Do you still see them as a title contender in the Western Conference?
That's a very good point. Honestly, I don't. After seeing the news of him being shipped off, the way I found out was on Twitter of all places as well. But
it's a news source.
It is a very good news source, as long as you read out the rumors and find Yahoo Sports and other articles like that posting the information. I just don't. I don't see Oklahoma City standing a chance against some of the other teams in the West. However, they do have the advantage, because when you look at the Western Conference as a whole, this coming year, I do not believe it's as strong as the East. There are a couple of teams, honestly, both in LA. I think the Clippers and Lakers could both come out. I think the Spurs will be in the mix. Mavericks are kind of slowly on their way out, but they still have the potential to get there anytime you have Dirk Nowitzki on the hardwood. So I don't know. I think Kevin Durant is going to be his MVP style this year. I believe Westbrook is going to be greedy as always. He's going to be taking those shots, whether fans like it or not. Not sure if he's going to be able to come through in the clutch like James Harden, but if you have Durant, Ibaka, and Westbrook, you will be fine in the long run. I don't think it's a championship team, but it's definitely top four.
Right. I think there are three championship contending teams in the Western Conference, and they're the same three that they've been for 3 years now. It's the Lakers, the Thunder, and the Spurs. The Spurs are old. The Thunder are young. The Lakers are old, but I don't know. I mean, they're all capable of getting to that Western Conference final and then seeing either, what, the Heat, the Bulls, or the Celtics in the finals on the other side?
There is a lot more, actually. I can go as far as saying maybe Brooklyn has a shot of going it with just the additions they made, adding Darren Williams, keeping him around, and then a couple of other pieces as well. But I don't know. Would you want to throw the Clippers in the mix? I know you're a Laker fan, but I think they'll be in there on the 4 or 5 spot in the West.
I think they can make the playoffs. I don't think they can make a run. Chris Paul is my favorite player in the NBA. Chauncey Billups is my second favorite player in the NBA. It's been like that for a long time.
I think Blake Griffin is your least favorite player in the NBA.
Well, I don't have a problem with him because he's never really harmed the Lakers.
Good point, but he might in the future.
I don't see an inside game with that team. When you slow it down in the playoffs, is their biggest threat in the paint a pick and roll? And once you can stop somebody, an alley-oop, what is Blake Griffin or DeAndre Jordan going to do?
Yeah, that's what they do well. That's why their system works out very well.
Well, I've never seen a team alley-oop its way to a championship.
I guess that's a good point if you can use the pun there. But the fact the inside game, typically you need the good combination of both. So it should help the Clippers in the long run. Just a matter of whether they could do it this year or whether they're just going to hang out in that 4 or 5 or hopefully make even fight for a playoffs. God forbid some other team in the West steps up.
Right. They did get deeper this year with the additions of Grant Hill, Lamar Odom. They've got a deep bench. Just the bigs, I don't believe in them.
Yeah, it's good. They're going to take some grooming. I mean, they're both very young with Jordan and also Griffin. I think they're both their third year in the league respectively, I believe.
Yeah.
So still very young. They have plenty of time to mature.
They do. But Chris Paul, an MVP candidate, perhaps. We'll see how that season goes. We'll make our MVP picks later in the show. Let's get to the Eastern Conference right now, though. So who are your title contenders there?
A couple out east. I think you mentioned the big ones. I think the Bulls are there. The Celtics are there. Obviously, the Heat. They're actually my favorite. So, by the way, we never actually officially picked our finals. So I'm going to say with the season just kicking off today, the San Antonio Spurs will be the team for me going to the finals in the West. As for the East, I'm going to go with Miami Heat just because of I don't see a team contending with them yet. The Bulls have a chance, but with Derrick Rose's injury not coming back for about half the season, possibly more, I think it's going to take him some time. And I think the same applies for the Celtics. When you just lose Ray Allen over to the Heat, who just added more firepower, they added another nearly retired player who came back again in Jermaine O'Neal and some others to kind of fit the minor roles of just filling out the payroll. I don't know if Boston's going to be as big of a picture as people think, especially with all the rumors of where's Rajon Rondo going to end up. Is he going to go over the OKC? Is he going to be shipped away? Is a team like Brooklyn going to come in the mix if they couldn't get Darren Williams, but now where's he going to go? So they're just dealing with more of, can I keep the players I have right now? So I don't think Boston's going to be as big of a contender as people think. They could surprise me. They could surprise other people because look what they did last year. But I'm going to say Heat Spurs finals.
All right. You could probably guess my team in the West was going to be the Lakers. Dwight Howard,
what
Steve Nash, Pau Gasol, Meta World Peace. Oh, yeah, that guy Kobe Bryant. He can get it done every now and then. But in the East, you're just bashing on the Celtics. And I'm going to go with the Celtics. This is their roster. I know you made a mistake. Jermaine O'Neal's now on the Phoenix Suns. No big deal.
Good point. Sorry.
They don't need him on the Celtics anymore. But here
he's gone.
I won't even read off their roster. I'll just read off the additions that they made this year. Leandro Barbosa. Great coming off the bench while Avery Bradley's suffering from that shoulder injury. He's going to provide points, a spark coming off the bench. Jason Terry, another spark off the bench. Courtney Lee, another spark off the bench. They took Fab Melo and Jared Sullinger in the draft. So you've got big guys coming off the bench that KG and Brandon Bass can mentor into the big guys that Doc Rivers
Fab
wants.
Fab Melo's going to take a lot of grooming, though.
Okay, he's not going to produce this year.
No. Chris Joseph's going to be way better than Melo was.
Yes.
I think, in my opinion. At least he's more NBA ready if you're going that way.
Right. He's 6'7", though.
True.
So he's not going to play. He's not going to be big.
He's a monster. Well, when you look at Melo anyways, Melo at 7 and 6'7". I don't know. He could play that small forward position, although power forward was his role, I guess, in Syracuse. Although, I don't know, with all the additions you named, none of them really, they were just solid role players. And my problem is, what five are going to be able to start every day? You have Jason Terry, who's very old, now 13 years in the league, along with Paul Pierce, 14 years. And then you can go as far as Kevin Durant, 17 years. Those are basically three of their four stars now in the lineup that are all over 10 years of experience, which is great because you're right. If you're making the NBA championship run, it's very solid, but then I don't know how big of a role some of these rookies are going to be able to play.
They also bring back Jeff Green, who had the heart problem last year, and he's fourth-year contributor. He played great when he was the number three option before Harden in OKC.
Yeah,
and now he's a small forward, power forward, especially now they can go small. Last year when KG was moved to the center, he played some of his best basketball of his career. And he's getting older, but he's getting rebounds, blocking shots, and playing defense.
That's a good point. He does still have a couple more years in him. And also, I just don't know if I could see Avery Bradley or some of the other ones we mentioned, even Jared Sullinger. Are they going to put him out in the court? What if it comes down to Boston's up by two and you have to rely on the defense of some of those rookies in the lineup?
Avery Bradley is their defensive stopper. He was picking guys up full court in the playoffs last year until he got hurt.
He was, and I agree. I think the best defensive addition might be Barbosa.
Yes.
He
can guard a one or two.
He could, and yeah, with his 6'3" frame, anybody, yeah, he has a great matchup there. Fab Melo would be one, but more focused on like Sullinger, Chris Joseph. Obviously, they won't be playing probably, but potentially, what if injury haunts this team? I don't know if they're going to be deep enough on the bench / experienced enough there to make a big role. So that's the only concern. If this is a healthy team, I think they could fly the whole way to the finals, or definitely the final four. I think they will probably make the semifinals regardless. I don't know. It'll be interesting.
Well, I'm gonna predict that they are healthy just because as a team, as a unit, these guys don't have a history of individual injury problems. So I'm going to trust them to stay healthy even as they are getting older. Paul Pierce is still the truth. He can deliver in the clutch. He can still shoot the mid-range and the elbows and the top of the key three as well as anybody in the league. And I just think this team's going to stay healthy and put up a great fight and lose in six games to the Lakers in the NBA Finals.
Interesting. So you got them going in six. I think the Heat are going to be repeat champions. I think they're going to do it right around six as well. Obviously, I have the Spurs in that one. But you mentioned, Josh, about players really picking up and taking that big role. So let's switch gears to another award. Let's look at the MVP really quick. Who would you have winning the NBA MVP in 2013?
Well, first of all, I just want to say any MVP in the NBA is going to come from a team that finishes third or better in their respective conference. So I think the six teams' best players, like as we mentioned, the guys who are possible for it, come from the Heat, the Thunder, the Lakers, the Celtics,
Spurs,
and I'm not going to say the Bulls because Derrick Rose is out all year. So whoever, Indiana, no. Sixers, no. So it's going to be one of those five teams.
Could be Griffin. It could be Griffin if he has an ungodly lyric. Same thing goes with Chris Paul.
I think Chris Paul would get it. Very unlikely, but if there's any Clipper to get it, I would say Chris Paul. Kobe, has he even won an MVP award ever? Maybe he's won one. I don't even know if he's won one.
He's
a travesty.
No, there's no way. There's no way a guy like that can win all those rings and not win an MVP. I'll do some searching on that. While,
you look it up. I'll keep talking. Well, my MVP pick is, I think, just about everybody else's sane MVP pick. I'm going with LeBron James. He 7 rebounds a game, 7 assists a game for his career. We know he can score 30 points whenever he wants to. Gets his teammates involved. He doesn't get healthy. He's built too much like a tank to get hurt. I just don't see any way that LeBron's not going to win the award unless he makes a conscious decision to sit out time during the regular season.
I do agree with the LeBron James pick. Just for argument's sake, I think the only other one who could really contend with him this coming year is Kevin Durant, as he's been chasing the title, at least the past 3 years been in the league, or played the bigger role in the league, at the NBA scoring title. I'm going to give it to Durant just because of actually the loss to James Harden. I think his minutes are going to go up slightly. Obviously, the guy logs like 35-plus minutes a night anyways, but I feel like he has the potential to really break out, not only beat the scoring title, but also take this team to potentially the finals, which would solidify his spot, saying, we just lost our sixth best man on the team. the most feared lineup possibly in the NBA, and he's still winning it. That would be a huge win for him. So I think it's going to come down to those two. And then to go back to the NBA MVP thing, by the way, Kobe did win it in 2008.
So he has just one.
And he has five. He has he's a two-time finals MVP in 09 and 10.
Right, Shaq won the other three yes. when they won him in the early 2000s.
Exactly. So, but it's still an MVP, and that was a year where the guys we just mentioned weren't even present really that time.
Right.
Just babies.
I think Kevin Durant can average 35 points a game and still not win the MVP because he's not producing on rebounds. He's not producing on and with assists and giving the ball to his teammates. He can lead the league in scoring. James Harden will be missed, but he's only going to be missed in scoring. He's not going to be missed in rebounds, so he's not going to take advantage of that absence. Westbrook's still going to dominate the ball, and neither one of them, Westbrook or Durant, is going to have an astounding number of assists because both of them love to shoot. So it's just going to be Durant. I mean, it's just going to be LeBron with the amount of statistics over Durant.
The one thing I'll say before we go to the next point is, and when you mentioned rebounds, he did have 8 rebounds per game last season. So I don't know how well that stat is going to hold. 28 points per game. You're saying he can go to 35. I agree. I think more like probably 30, 31.
Right, I'm not saying he will go to 35.
Right,
but
he has
even
potential.
If he did.
Right.
Right.
But his rebound numbers are there, and eight rebounds a game is not too shabby at all for a small forward.
No, but LeBron's a small forward, and he'll get 7 or 8 rebounds a game, and then he'll have 5 more assists than Durant, and then how do you give it to him if they're both finishing 1 and 2 in their conference?
No, that's a good point. I mean, it'll be a battle. That's the whole point. That's why we have this segment. So we'll see who went out, I guess, at the end of the year. But one more award. We'll skip the coach of the year award because it's really hard to predict what's going to happen with all the new coming coaches. But let's do the rookie of the year. Which NBA rookie do you feel is going to have the biggest impact on their team?
Well, I'm going to go with the guy who I think is going to be the best pro that was in the NBA that was in college basketball last year. The guy out of Kentucky, the number 2 pick of the NBA draft, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. As I said, pick number 2 overall by the Charlotte Bobcats. He is going to run the show there. I think he can score whenever he wants to. He's a hustle guy. He's going to get assists, rebounds, show his heart. I just don't know if there's anything on the floor he can't do.
I agree with Gilchrist. I think they're really, when you look at the draft class this year, in terms of where people ended, there's not many options, in my opinion, for MVP. And I think it's the top 3 are going to be in the race. I really honestly see it as Anthony Davis, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, and Bradley Beal as the 3 going. I'm actually going to go with the number 1 pick. I think Anthony Davis is going to do it because when you look at MVP, it's also defensive stats, as New Orleans is really looking for that guy in the paint who could step up on both ends of the court. I think he's going to be the one. Will he outscore Kidd-Gilchrist? Probably not. Will he still put up about double-digit, double-doubles a night? Yes, he'll be right around those numbers. But if you want the so-called, quote-unquote, dark horse, I think Bradley Beal would be one of them. Just the deep threat poise he has for the Warriors going into this season. Another one, potentially, if you want to go really far down, would be as far as...
Well, I have a dark horse for you.
Like Deion Waiters, even, on Syracuse, who got drafted in the 2nd round. He's a player I think could play an immediate impact.
My dark horse isn't a 2nd-round pick. I think he number 6th overall. Can you name a Portland Trailblazers point guard other than Damian Lillard out of Weber State?
I was just about to say that. I was like, I know Damian Lillard, but I don't know anybody else.
So he's the guy there.
Yeah, he is.
With LaMarcus Aldridge, that can make him look good.
And no more Roy anymore.
No, Brandon Roy is still in the league, actually.
Right, but not with them.
Not with Portland.
Yes.
I'm just surprised he's in the league.
I am too.
But yeah, so Damian Lillard
could be a comeback story.
Be comeback player of the year, maybe?
Yeah, potentially. Depending on how that knee goes.
Well, it's good right now. We'll see.
Till about the 20th game of the season. There's some issues, a little tweaking, icing it, wrap it up. Then you're out for the rest of the season.
All right, so we're just done talking about college players. Now let's get into NCAA Division I college basketball. Let's take a look at the top 25 rankings. What caught your eye, Nick?
I think there's a couple of big things. I know we're both going to touch on this, and I think it deserves to be the first one mentioned, is that Indiana's, for the 3rd time, they're ranked in the top team. Also, it's the 5th time that a combination of Indiana, Kentucky, and Louisville have all been ranked inside the top 10. Louisville's number 2 right behind Indiana, and then Kentucky follows them at number 3. So 1-2-3 goes those big basketball prominent schools. One of the things, I guess, that there is to mention, there's a couple of mid-level programs in there. Creighton's ranked in 16. UNLV at 18. Memphis makes their way back into the mix after losing Calipari a couple years ago. They're in between those at 17. San Diego State's in the low 20s. Gonzaga's back in the mix. So, I mean, there's different schools that are getting recognition. I know Murray State's just outside of it as well. So it's not really more of the power conferences. You're seeing all these mid-major schools starting to step up, and I think that's going to dictate what the NCAA basketball is going to look like this season.
Right. I want to talk about the Pac-12 schools and even more generally just West Coast teams starting to play basketball well again. You look at number 12, we have Arizona, 13, UCLA. We keep going down, 18, UNLV, 19, Baylor's in Texas. If you want to consider that the West Coast, you can. 20, San Diego State, 21, Gonzaga. It's been dominated by Kentucky and the SEC, or yes. ACC, Duke, North Carolina.
NC State now at number 6.
NC State, when was the last time NC State was ranked over Duke and North Carolina this season?
I don't know. I try to look at this. It's been a long time. It's been well over a decade, but you know, it's not wrong. The AP poll got that exactly right. Duke and UNC are have to rebolster their team. Obviously, UNC, I feel number 11 is so generous in the AP polls, even coming from a UNC fan myself. They should be more at the lower 20s if you're going to give it to them. But the fact they're 11 just shows the program respect and also the weakness of the rest of the league. So I know we're going to go more into the West, but sorry to get off on the tangent. But NC State, when they come back with the great work that Mark Godfrey did, he was 1 year removed now from Alabama, taking over NC State. CJ Leslie not recommitted, but said he's coming back for another season and opting to miss the NBA draft, and that was the main reason why they were 6, because all the polls before all this drama happened with CJ Leslie, if he came back to like their top 5 powerhouse, if he goes, they'll sit around the 20 mark. So one player is the difference for apparently 15 spots.
Well, you mentioned rebolstering your roster, and the first thing I think of is Coach Calipari in Kentucky. He has to rebolster his roster every year. Did a great job last year with it winning the national title, but he's got 5 new starters this year, not a single starter back from last year, and I think he can do it again. I don't see why this team won't be in the hunt at the end of the season. He gets the best high school players in the country, plays them in college, and then turns them into the best college players in the country and puts them in the NBA.
Well, will they be in the hunt? Absolutely. But will they win it? I don't think they stand a chance this year. I mean, even when you look at their recruits coming in, there's no like standout player like you've had in the past, and Anthony Davis, even Terrence Jones a couple of years ago, he was probably one of the ones who stayed the longest. I don't know. I don't know how they're going to replace those big roles. Even Marquise Teague, how do you find another point guard just to be able to distribute the ball when there's not as many proven scorers on the team yet when they're all so young? So
well,
I don't
none
know.
Of their guys are ever proven. They just figure it out as it goes along. Regular season wins and losses don't really matter as long as they're in games in March, and they just find a way to do it by the end of the year. So I'm looking forward to watching Kentucky basketball this year. But then, as we mentioned on the West Coast, it's going to be nice to see the Pac-12 recognized as a conference with at least 2 good teams this year.
Yes. Arizona and UCLA are both going to do their parts in helping kind of rebooster the Pac-12 standings in terms of basketball, as they've kind of gotten away also from the football. So it's more of just Pac-12 baseball has been kind of running the league, or at least one of the major sports. Obviously, they're really good at women's soccer and others of the lower revenue sports. But it's really interesting with the UCLA Bruins. They're dealing with a couple of transfers as well. First year now that Larry Drew, former UNC point guard, is going to be able to play. So it'll be interesting to see how his role is going to shape. But they do return a couple of very good players in Tyler Lamb, Joshua Smith, both those two coming back as juniors this year. And then you have the Ware twins down low, so they have the pressure, at least in the paint. Then adding Tony Parker, the 6'9" freshman, he actually may be one of the freshmen of the year, along with Shabazz Muhammad. This team is going to be very stacked talent wise. It's just going to be a difference of do they click in a matter of 2 weeks, or this team that's going to take the Pac-12 play until they finally start getting things going. And if that's the case, they're going to get hidden very deep in the standings.
Right. Well, you mentioned Larry Drew Jr. His dad, obviously Larry Drew, head coach of the Hawks, grew up not too far away from UCLA, about 45 minutes down the road, went to my rival high school, I'll say it, Taft High School in Woodland Hills, California, and he was a star there. Same high school that Jordan Farmar went to, same high school that Giants ex-wide receiver Steve Smith went to, and both played basketball there, great players. But that school's just been a basketball powerhouse in high school for a long time. Larry Drew was a senior my freshman year. And I was not yet on varsity, but I was playing basketball my freshman year. And he lit up our gym. And it was ridiculous.
That would have been interesting to see, but
we were not a basketball powerhouse. They were. So you can just imagine how that game ended.
But really, really quick here, sticking with the UCLA outlook, their schedule, they have Georgetown, they have San Diego State, who's now a top 25 team, they have Texas, they take on Missouri. So those are some of the notable out-of-conference games. Not too bad of a schedule either. Could have been a little better, yes, but there are still some tests against the top 25 opponents. I don't know if they're going to be able to make it out through that stretch, but if they do, when you start going to the conference play against teams like California, Stanford, Utah, and Colorado to start this season, it's going to be almost a free ride to the finish.
Yeah, if they live up to expectations, or at least my expectations this year, I'm guaranteeing a Sweet 16 berth for UCLA. I think they just have a lot of talent this year, great recruiting class, and they can bring it all together.
I could agree with that. I don't think just to mention the U of A, because we didn't really we mentioned the two schools and being ranked high. I don't know if they're going to be able to contain all the hype that they have coming into the season, because they always seem to struggle down the stretch. 2 years ago, they'll say not a chance, obviously, on their Elite Eight run when they beat Duke in the process as well. But just in terms of roster standpoint, they just lost one of their star freshmen because the head coach couldn't help. He couldn't help get everything together for him from a game standpoint. And then they just finished up their annual blue and red game before their exhibition comes actually tomorrow night on Wednesday. But from a box score standpoint, really not a whole lot popping off the stat sheet. Yes, a bunch of players obviously had double digits, but no one individual really took control of this game. Nick Johnson had 20 points. He led the entire team, but he went on 8-for-17 shooting, so not sure. I think with 17 chances, pretty easy to put up 20 points. So I don't know if they're going to be able to face all the hype. They are fairly, but they do have a nice mix of experience as well with guys like Solomon Hill. It's going to come down to whether they adjusted over the offseason, had enough time preparing and knowing, saying, hey, look, Wildcats, it's going to be the first time we're going to be in the top 25 since the middle of last season, or at least almost top 15, I should say, because they were hovering around there. So, I don't know, Pac-12 has a chance to really make a stand.
Right. Unfortunately, with Arizona, we won't know until March if they are for real or not, because their in-conference schedule will be weak, aside from UCLA, just because the rest of the Pac-12 is not much above garbage as usual again this year.
Well, one thing I want to mention, too, before I know we're about to wrap up the show, but in terms of the NCAA All-Americans, I wanted to get this point in. We kind of mentioned the whole point of the mid-majors stepping up. At least I said, and you mentioned as well, like ACC is a little weaker this year. SEC, Big East, same story for them. The Big Ten is the only one who actually improved. The All-Americans go as followed. You have Big Ten players in Indiana's Cody Zeller, Ohio State's Deshaun Thomas, and Michigan's Trey Burke. Then outside of those three, the other three getting the bid for the first team is Creighton junior forward Doug McDermott. Then you have seniors on Murray State, Isaiah Cannon, and then also Lehigh's C.J. McCollum. So Murray State, Lehigh, and Creighton cap off the top six, so to speak, in college basketball.
Would you ever think that you would see a Lehigh and Creighton All-American before you see a North Carolina and a UCLA and a Duke and a...
Creighton, maybe, just because Doug McDermott brings a whole different level. He is literally the reason. You might as well go in the rankings and say 13 UCLA, 14 Michigan State, 15 Missouri, 16 Doug McDermott, 17 Memphis. Obviously, it's not the case, but he's going to be a superstar in the NBA as well, as I'm assuming he'll probably be a lottery pick after the season's done, assuming he goes after his junior year. But Murray State's proven they can play. I mean, they've completely come back the past 2 years and baffled the minds of NCAA basketball fans. Lehigh, no idea where he came from. Probably just the fact that they beat second-ranked Duke last year, I think, is literally the only reason he's giving justice right now. Obviously, he's a tremendous player. Look at his stat lines. He's right around the 20 points per game mark as well, so he is a leader in the scoring department. But in the AP All-Americans, wow.
Right, you mentioned it. A lot of interesting things we're going to see this year. And unless there's anything else that you have to add, you've listened to the first episode of Full Court Press. For Nick Merrick, I'm Josh Franz. Enjoy the opening night of NBA basketball, and we'll talk to you next week.